It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. 25 years ago, this song hit the radio. If you believe, they put a man on the moon, man on the moon. If you believe, there's nothing up his sleeve, and nothing is cool. That is Man on the Moon by Athens' own REM. It was one of many hit tracks from the group's 8th studio album, Automatic for the People. That record hit number 2 on the Billboard 200 charts in 1992 and was certified 4 times platinum in the U.S. Automatic for the People is getting a 25-year anniversary re-release out on November 10th. And with me to talk about the record is REM's bass player and sometimes piano player, Mike Mills. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello. And I wonder, how often, if ever, do you listen back to this old stuff?
Not really that often. It's hard for me to listen for pleasure because I'm too hypercritical about things. But obviously, because of the attention around this one, I've heard it a good bit lately, and it sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Do you listen to tracks ever and think, oh, I wish I could get back in the studio and fix whatever?
Oh yes, there's almost always something that you might have done differently. But that's the trouble with making records. You have to know when to just let it go and cut it off.
Well, that would be my next question, is how do you know that? How do you know when to stop tinkering?
Well, these things called deadlines are really useful when you have those things. You know, it depends on your budget, your deadline, but you also, you know, when you're first starting off, you tend to have more of a budget and more of a deadline. And then if you become more successful, there can be a tendency to over-examine. So you just have to have a built-in editing. Bill Berry was always very good at that for us, was knowing when to stop the song and when to stop working on it and say, that's enough, let's go.
I want to play as many of the tracks from this album as I possibly can. So let's go to one of the slower cuts. This is Everybody Hurts. Don't let yourself go. Sometimes. You know, you guys had been a band for a long time by the time this album came out, and I wonder if you had any sense of what you had on your hands, that this one was going to be sort of a smash hit. Did you suspect it?
I don't believe we did. Really, ever since the first album, we were always expecting that the next one would be the one that everyone hated. that's why we called the second one Reckoning, because we figured that was going to be our day of reckoning and everything is going to come crashing down. You know, we knew it was a good record. We knew we liked the songs. But you know, you never know what they're going to do once you turn them loose. But we felt pretty good about it.
How much do you think that album was a product of its time, of the 1990s? Or in other words, would it sound really different if you made that today?
Oh, I'm sure it would sound completely different today, you know. But that's such an infinitely variable question. I mean, would we still be 30 years old, or would this be the later version of us making this, and would be using today's technology and trying to get it on today's radio? I mean, there's just any number of variables that can change that. But the answer really is that every record is a time capsule. Every record is an encapsulation of what the band was and what they were thinking and what they were feeling at that moment, which is why they're so cool, because they're pretty much self-contained.
So let's hear another one that became a hit. A lot of the songs on this album did. This is Night Swimming. Night swimming deserves a quiet night. The photograph on the dashboard, taken years ago, turned around back so the windshield shows. That you're on piano in that particular track. You know, I heard a recording of this in which the entire audience was singing every word along with the band. And I wonder, the first time that happened, when you played a concert and the whole audience knew your music, what is that like?
Well, you know, it means you've connected. You know, the good songs are the ones that resonate with people, and they care enough to listen to it enough to to learn the words. You know, playing that song live, I was too busy concentrating on not screwing up the piano to hear anybody singing. But generally, yeah, when the audience is shouting along, you know, you've reached them, and it just elevates. You know, if you're in a live concert and you hear everybody singing, it elevates the concert. It makes you feel like they're on your side, and you know, whatever you're going to do is probably going to work.
You have stayed in Athens. How come?
Well, because I got to leave it a lot. You know, that's part of it. But at the same time, there's no better place to come back to. It is home and has been for many, many years. You know, when you've been on the road and you've been in big cities and, you know, just depending on your makeup. But for me personally, it was really nice to be able to come back here and decompress. I love this town. Always have. And I really enjoy being here. So why not come back?
Well, do you think of REM's music as being Southern?
Well, yes. I mean, by it's de facto, if nothing else. I mean, the fact is we all were in the South, and, you know, I think I'm the only one that was here my entire life, but we definitely felt Southern. You know, we just enjoyed presenting being Southern in a way that most people didn't think of as Southern. A lot of the things about the South get badly stereotyped, and you know, people tend to focus on some of the more negative aspects of it. So we were really happy to present Southernness and Southerners as something, you know, unique and interesting and intelligent, to be honest with you. So that was a really fun way to show the world that the South was not just what you thought it was.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with REM bassist Mike Mills. We're talking about the classic album Automatic for the People, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary. Do people recognize you? Do they come up to you and start singing their favorite REM song to you?
Oh, I hope not. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, sure, you get recognized. Depends on where you are. Depends on context. I mean, most of the time I walk around completely anonymous. But, you know, if I'm at a rock show, there'll be music fans there. But so I'm more likely to be recognized in a situation like that. But generally, it's, you know, it's pretty free and easy.
And is that a positive or a negative that, you know, you're not as recognizable, say, as Michael Stipe's face?
Oh, I'd say it's definitely a positive. You know, it's good to be in a famous band without being particularly famous. You kind of get the best of both worlds.
So let me ask you some more esoteric questions. And let me start with, like, the role of a bassist in a band. There's one thing about playing a solo bass or being a soloist or whatever it is. But what is the purpose? What is a priority for a bass player when they're playing in a band?
Well, that's a good question. It, of course, varies, obviously, from band to band. I think generally the first requirement is that you play well with the drummer. You know, whether you're in just a 2-4 stomp country band or whether you're in a, you know, prog jazz band, you still have to be able to link up with the drummer. So I think that's the first priority. In our band, I was really lucky that Peter's style of playing allowed me a lot of freedom, you know, both to create melody and to also sort of dictate what the chords were, because a lot of Peter's open chording allowed me to establish with the root note, if I ever played it, which I didn't very often, but I could often determine what the chord was. So that's really fun. So generally the bass player's got to, you know, depending on what other instruments there are in the band, he's got to hold down the low end, literally the bottom end of the spectrum, and just keep things moving with the drummer.
And who do you look to as some of your sort of bass mentors, your idols when it comes to bass playing?
Well, I looked for, I think, different things in a lot of bass players. Certainly, you know, Paul McCartney is kind of up there as not only a bass player, but a songwriter and a singer and someone who can do all those things at the same time, which is pretty admirable. I was never really a huge fan of the band Yes, but I loved Chris Squire's playing. I was a huge Allman Brothers fan, so I was really a big fan of Barry Oakley. In fact, my first bass rig was copied directly from what he used to play.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So those are three that pop to mind, but there are certainly a lot more.
Well, let me actually play you a clip of you. This is you actually doing an interview in 1993, just a year after Automatic for the People came out, and you're talking about this particular album.
It's amazing the amount of emphasis people put on the lead vocal. I know it is, you know, it's the part of the song that you really hear and everything. But because I did a couple on the last record, it's like, wow, there's all this. But, you know, I've been singing on it, all the records. You know, it's back there. It's just not lead vocals. So it just didn't work out that way. It's not something I worry about. You know, if there's a song that needs me to be the lead singer, I'll do it. But it's not something I really push for.
Do you still feel that? I mean, you must get to sing more now. Or do you still feel the way that it doesn't matter whether you're on lead or backup?
Well, everything is really in service of the song. Whatever your project, you want to do the thing that makes the song as fully realized as possible. I do some fun stuff. I do some charity things now, charity music things with other bands that if we do an REM song, I'll sing the lead on it. And it's really fun. The One I Love is a great fun song to sing, and I really enjoy it. But again, you know, I was in the band with one of the best rock and roll singers of all time. So who am I going to push him out of the way and say, let me have that mic? I enjoyed my role in the band constantly. I love to sing. But I've always loved to sing harmonies and counter melodies and backups and things like that. Ever since I was a kid, that was kind of where my attention went when I listened to music on the radio. So it worked out nicely for me.
Let's hear a little bit more. This is Drive.
What if I ride? What if you walk? What if you rock around the clock? Tips, top, tips, top. What if you did? What if you walk? What if you try to get off?
What do you make of some of the arguments that go on recently in pop music? And the one I think of is, because REM was such an incredible live band, the musicianship of all the players was so high. What do you make of the argument over whether or not a pop musician should be able to recreate live the sound that listeners hear on the album? Do you think that's essential?
I don't think it's essential. I think it just depends on, you know, what you want, what you expect. I mean, today, it's funny, I hear young people sing, really young kids. I saw a girl sing the national anthem, and her voice sounded like it was being auto-tuned, but it wasn't. She had just learned to sing in a way that sounded like she was being auto-tuned. So, music changes, music evolves. What people expect to hear certainly changes. You know, I prefer live music done by people that can really play. Then again, I love Kraftwerk, So fortunately, there's room for all of this stuff in the musical spectrum.
So is there a larger or wider purpose for pop music, do you think? Or is it just making songs you like? Is there a deeper meaning to it?
Well, of course, I think there is. I mean, even in today's multimedia world, you know, music is the soundtrack to your life. When important things are happening to you as you grow and mature, you'll remember the songs you were listening to when those things happened, and that's probably always going to be the case. I hope so, anyway. Music can be a social change force, and certainly not like it used to be. Obviously, music did help change in the world. Did help change the world back in the 60s and 70s, but there are just so many other platforms for people to get information and put information out there now that it's been diluted a good bit. But sure, I think music can be whatever you want it to be. And if you want to make music that is going to try to change the world, then more power to you.
But, you know, and I wonder then how protective you are of REM's message and the things that REM stood for as a group. And I know that REM in at least one way got pulled into the debate over what songs can and cannot be used for political rallies. Do you feel protective of the band's legacy?
Oh, certainly we do. I mean, we will never, you know, license a song to a commercial enterprise just for pure commerciality. We do let our songs be used for certain political things or certain social movements, things like that. And, you know, when it comes to things like what Trump did and stuff like that, when people purchase a blanket license, they can play whatever they want. And I don't think we can legally stop people from doing that. We can just make a big stink about it and embarrass them if at all possible.
So let's hear one more clip of music. This is The Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight.
We'll be right back.
So 25 years on, what, and you're finally, you're hearing these songs again, maybe more often than you have in a really long time. How do you feel about the album? I mean, where do you place it in your memory? How do you put it in context?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, since I get asked about it a lot, I tend to think that musically this is our strongest record from start to finish. I think that for a lot of reasons, none of which I can be absolutely sure of, but the fact that we knew we didn't have to tour, the fact that we could take our time with this, the fact that we were enjoying a little bit less pressure from having to tour and play so much, it just came together really well. We were having a good time writing the songs and making the songs, and I think it's just our most consistent record from start to finish, so I feel pretty good about that. But as I always tell people when they ask me, I love all my children equally.
Fair enough. Very diplomatic. That's Mike Mills, musician, bass player for Athens' own REM. Their record, Automatic for the People, gets a 25th anniversary re-release out on November 10th. And that doesn't seem that long to me, which probably just proves that I'm old. Mike, thank you.
You and me both.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.